Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Hello, Kelly.
Hi. It was so cute. We were like smiling at each other while the music was going off. It was so cute.
I know, because this is one of my favorite places to be every week.
Me too. It was really sweet. It was like a moment. It was just so cute.
How was your week?
So let me tell you.
Okay.
Can I just advise that no one ever bring two ADHD kids to a Passover Seder? That's all I have to say about that. So we went to a Seder.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm Jewish. And we got invited, and my husband had an interview last minute.
Oh, good for him.
Exactly, okay. Which was great, but horrible for me. So I'm solo at this Passover dinner with 18 other people and a 3.5-year-old and a 6.5-year-old. And I mean, listen, it's boring for me. I mean, you know, to sit there at a Seder and talk about, you know, Pharaoh and the whole bit, it's like, you know.
And gefilte fish you have to eat.
Which actually, I don't mind.
Do you like it?
Funny.
Oh,
I know.
I've always couldn't stand that. I love the horseradish, though.
Horseradish is great. But I feel like either people love it or hate it.
Yes.
And like, I can understand, like, there were people who weren't Jewish who had never seen it. And they were like, ugh. Like, it was just so funny. And I'm like, I get it. It looks like it's already been eaten. I mean, I completely get it.
So was there one specific moment in time that they really just took over the show?
There was about 26 minutes in time, which is exactly how long the Seder lasts. Not that I was counting. But yeah, it was pretty rough. You know, I mean, thank God, like, people understood. They gave me some sympathy. And then my younger one went to the bathroom.
Uh-oh.
He had to make poop in the diaper. God, do I wish he would be on the potty. But no, in the pull-up, in the bathroom. And he locked himself in and couldn't get out for 10 minutes. We had to unscrew the door. He was flipping out. He was so scared.
Oh, no.
So here's what I want to say. The one thing I want to push for is meditation, because I was completely calm. I mean, he was screaming and he was so worried. And I remember thinking in that moment, like, I'm calmer than normal, because it's like, it's so piercing to hear that and know. But I don't know. I think meditating at least once a day is, you know, what I do, sometimes twice. It's just, it made me just sort of, you know, I was like, not as reactive, like, it's going to be all right. And then, yeah, obviously we unscrewed it and we got him out. But not the calmest of Passovers.
Oh, my gosh. And you know what? There's another piece to that, too, I would add. I think that when we really kind of grow up and we know that it's our opinion of ourselves that matters and not everybody else's, because you could be calm in a situation like that and somebody's going, she's not taking care of her children.
Yes.
She's not taking charge.
Yes.
Why doesn't she get him out of the room?
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have an opinion, especially those who don't have young children. You got to also put a shield up, I think, about that judgment. So good for you.
Well, no. I meant I was calm when he was locked in the bathroom, but I need to get better about the judgment, because that is so hard, because I feel horrible because it's like loud and it's disruptive and it's like, but yeah, that is a really good tip.
And kids are meant to be loud and disruptive, right?
Yes.
That's their plight in childhood.
It's
what
so
they're supposed
true.
To be.
Yes.
So you made it. You made it
through. I made it, thank God. Let my people go.
I actually did not go to a Seder this year. I have been going for many, many years, but I just had a more quiet. Did not feel like dealing with the Friday night traffic.
Sure.
You know, but also some good news, too, that Christopher has started this other career. It's probably his third career in medical billing and coding. And he got a job this last week.
Yay!
Ironically, at a rehab center, like one of the ones that I didn't work at, but that I know very well. So he's helping them with collections, and he's very excited. And, you know, I will also say this to listeners, anybody who's ever had, like, this is a positive stress, but it's life disruptive, because I've been used to him having his own schedule, and so he's available anytime I need him to take care of something, do an errand.
Yep.
Oh, honey, so-and-so called, can you manage that, please? Oh, yeah. Our Verizon bill. And now it's like, holy shit.
Yes.
All these things are on my list, because he's not supposed to be using his phone or doing any of that stuff. Half hour break during the day. So I've got to take
on
all that management stuff, the property management stuff. And so
it's a lot of work, right?
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, you know what? It's all for good. So
yes,
I'm
exactly. And it's adjustment. You get used to it.
Absolutely. So tell us about, because Abby
Pecorello.
Yes. It's our, one of the people that you have a long history with. So
yes.
Yes,
so,
highlight for...
Sure. So Abby Pecorello was our guest last week, and she spoke about Go Noodle, which is a website. It's incredible. It's 100 streaming videos that get kids moving, running, jumping, dancing. My kids are obsessed. It's great. It's reaching over 10 million kids a month in school. So I'm really happy to promote that just because I think it's so great for kids to move and help the obesity epidemic and things like that. And she was a great guest, super funny, love her energy.
She was great. She was
isn't she fun?
Like,
I know.
Like on natural speed.
All the time. Yeah. And that is just how she was. Yeah.
So much fun. And what a great resource.
Yes.
So today we also have a fabulous guest, and we're definitely going to invite our listeners. Please give us a call today at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815, because we have a very accessible guest today who's open and willing to share many things about her life. Today we have Tanya Brown, certified life coach, the youngest sister of the late Nicole Brown Simpson. Honoring Nicole's memory, her family founded the Nicole Brown Foundation, which is dedicated to educating communities on strategies for domestic violence prevention. Tanya's involvement in the foundation has included speaking and advocating to community groups, service organizations, schools, law enforcement agencies, nonprofits, and shelters, providing assistance to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. With her new book, Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide, she has courageously come forward to speak about her own personal struggle with mental illness and eating disorder, depression, anxiety, and unresolved grief after enduring the loss of her beloved sister and several close friends. She is with us today to destigmatize mental illness and help people face and cope with daily stressors and unresolved pain to prevent depression. This documents her journey back to wellness in an effort to help others overcome their own personal obstacles. Welcome, Tanya Brown.
Hi, how are you two? Happy to be here.
Oh, yay.
We're so excited to have you.
Oh, my gosh. What a story you have.
Glad it worked out.
Yes, what a story. Yeah, I'm dying to know why you wrote this book.
Why I wrote the book?
Yes.
Because I got so sad just reading all these Facebook posts about these young kids having overdoses, fatal overdoses, depression, anxiety, bullying. And here I am sitting on this profound story that a lot of people can relate to because of my family, you know, my family experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just always a thought in my mind. And then I was in graduate school for psychology, and I got an email from a man in Kentucky, William Coyle, said, "Have you ever thought about sharing your story?" Mm-hmm. Now, what people don't know is that I had basically a psychotic break 12 years ago this October. Mm-hmm. I basically snapped. I lost my mind. And, you know, here I am. Next thing you know, I have a whole bottle of Klonopin in my left hand, a bottle of red wine in the other. And as I was putting the pills to my mouth, my sister Dominique stopped me. And I said, "Get me out of here before I hurt myself or someone around me." Mm-hmm. Now, to me, that was just a life experience that I had gone through. Until this man, William, said, "Your story is much bigger than what you're seeing." And mm-hmm. I said, "Okay, let's talk." And then he brought out my story just through conversation. I'm like, oh my gosh, people are really relating to this.
Wow.
And sadly, but I'm happy that I have the courage that one, I survived, and two, that I'm just delighted to hear the people who have read this story, who relate to the story. I mean, I make $3 off of my book. It's not a moneymaker,
right,
by all means.
That's
sure.
Actually on the high end, by the way, Tanya. You're doing pretty good,
right?
At $3 a book.
But, you know, I don't really go out there and promote it because when I launched it, I was still caring for my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad died two years ago from Alzheimer's. And mm-hmm. we were primary caregivers. So I didn't really have time to market the book. And then, like, literally 2 months after the book launched, my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, oh, my God, I just couldn't. So now I want to share it with people. And those who have read it,
mm-hmm.
It's heartwarming. It's really, like, thank you for writing this book. My husband committed suicide, and I always thought it was my fault, or I battled with depression, and I never knew how to get out of it. you know, this isn't a book just on, or a story. I don't want, even want to pitch my book. People can opt in or opt out to buy it. But the purpose of it is that we all read stories. We all read books. And then it leaves us in the sad. And I said to William, I said, I'm an academic. I'm like an academic. Mm-hmm. I need strategies. I need tools on how to figure things out. And so that's what I created in the back of my book is, you know, daily self-care strategies. Kelly, you were talking about meditation. Seriously, everybody who's listening,
yeah.
Meditation not only takes years off of your life, it adds years to your life, and it helps you find peace amid the chaos. So I'm a big advocate for meditation.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, I mean, that's kind of just where it all started. I was reading these posts, and then William entered my life, and I was like, okay, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, it's touching a lot of people's hearts, and that's why I wrote it.
And then who exactly is William?
He is a writer who is based out in Kentucky, and he says you know, he just has a way, he's very gifted. He just mm-hmm. has a way of making the reader want to turn the page. Because I wanted to put stuff in that book where it was, he's like, Tanya, you got to make it interesting. I go, okay. Yeah. So I just let him do it. So through interviewing, through knowing my story, just had a way of telling the story through my voice.
That's awesome. That's great.
He's very gifted, very gifted.
That is amazing.
Can you tell us a little bit about mental illness, your struggle with it, in the sense that was it always there? Did it, because I know you said 12 years ago was kind of the break, mm-hmm. but did you always struggle with it? It just got worse, or?
I think really looking back in hindsight, I always had it. Mm-hmm. I would have highs and lows, not manic depressive or bipolar disorder, but it was more of like I would get really, really happy and then, you know, not to the extreme where you can call it mania, just really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd get real, and my mom would always say, I remember her, she'd go, she's going to fall again.
Mm-hmm.
And really not knowing what it was until I hit high school. I had to bury a lot of friends of mine in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then in the 80s, we didn't have grief counselors. We didn't have first responders like people have today.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Columbine pretty much put that on the map. Thank goodness, sadly, that it had to happen. But thank God something good came out of it.
Sure.
But back then, we didn't have that. And so basically on a Friday, my friend Larry would be sitting next to me, and Monday he wouldn't be anymore because he died over the weekend.
Mm.
And nobody was there to process that. Being a teenager, how do you get through that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm from World War II parents. Pick up yourself by the bootstrap, carry on. Paint the house, get a job at Starbucks, do whatever you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And but it all caught up with me in a really bad way. And so my message really is you've got to walk through the tornado of pain, no matter how bad, no matter how insignificant you think it is. It could be just, I'm so stressed out at work. Well, if you're not acknowledging that stress or coping with it,
mm-hmm.
it's all going to catch up with you in some way. You may start drinking after work because you're so stressed out. You may start abusing your partners because you have no patience. You may start gambling or overeating because it makes you feel better. So eventually things get released and behavior starts changing. And so I'm a big advocate where, and I'm living proof,
mm-hmm.
of not facing my pain. I walked around it, above it, below it, but I never walked through it.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I was scared. I just didn't know where to go.
Sure. Yeah, no guidance.
Now listen to this, because this is weird, is that I didn't know where to go, even though I was going to school for counseling psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had started out with that being my major when I first started my college career.
Wow.
So even though I knew the importance of therapy, mm-hmm. I never thought about going in for myself.
Sure. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Wow. Now, Kelly and I both suffered from eating disorders when we were younger, and I also had a pretty big round with depression in my early 20s, so I can completely relate to all that you're talking about. And, you know, just using food as a way to cope, or thinking of suicide or drugs or all those things. It can be such a dark and lonely place.
It's because I love what Russell Brand says. He says, we have this hole in our soul that we're trying to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I was doing. 2 years after high school, my best friend, Harissa, died. And then that's when my eating disorder, because I'm 5'10", and I weigh 200 pounds. I hid my food like alcoholics hide their paraphernalia.
Right.
I hid my dirty boxes, or my dirty dishes, my empty boxes, my wrappers. And yes, people, I littered anything I could to get rid of the evidence. Sure. And, you know, when you live life like that, you know you got a problem.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When it becomes like a hiding and a, yeah.
So what you called your break 12 years ago a psychotic break. Let's just define that for our listeners. Did you actually go through a period of hallucinations or delusions, or more just like you felt like you were just cracking in half?
I was like just cracking in half. I didn't have hallucinations or delusions or anything like that, but it was just like, I almost had somebody say, "You're tired. Do yourself in." Mm. It wasn't me saying it.
Right.
It was somebody else or something saying it. Mm-hmm. "You're tired. You're done. You don't know where to go anymore. Call it a day."
Wow.
But then on my right shoulder, I must have had that little angel, my sister, walking in. And, I mean, seriously, I was inches away from swallowing that whole bottle.
Wow.
Inches.
And your other sister.
Simply because I never felt my pain.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And your other sister came in and helped you. Is that what you said?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. She grabbed my hand and said, "What the hell are you doing?"
Wow.
And that's why I know I'm here for a greater good, because immediately I said, "Minnie," her name's Dominique, but we call her Min. Uh-huh. And I said, "Min, get me out of here before I hurt myself or someone around me."
Yeah.
So wow. I was aware of what was going on.
Sure.
But at the same time, I just wanted to get out. I was so tired of one more thing not going right, because the trigger, let me back up. Sorry, everybody. The trigger was the cancellation of my wedding 4 days before.
Oh, wow. So it was that you were doing,
yeah,
or was
sorry.
It?
I've shared this story so many times, so I kind of forget who
sure.
I'm talking to. Yeah, my wedding was canceled 4 days before, and when that happened, that's when I started spiraling down into a dark tornado of pain and fear and anger and sure. hate and jealousy and envy, and I mean, it's like all the ugly stuff that we don't want to talk about, mm-hmm. right? And next thing you know, on October 9th, that's when I just took that bottle and I said, "I'm done. I'm so done." And it was there. I was very, very close. And then I spent 10 days in a psych unit and mm-hmm. 2.5 months in an outpatient program, Monday through Friday, 8 to 3. That was my job.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
I did the work. I did the work. And so as a life coach, I'm a bounce back life coach, helping people bounce back from that adversity. Going through counseling psych, I realized that I didn't want to be a therapist. It's a different hat. Mm-hmm. Maybe because it was too real for me. I'd been on that side, and when I had a 14-year-old in that suicidal state, I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, you know what? At that moment, I decided, I think what I'm going to do is be a life coach and be a speaker. And that is where my niche is. And then I refer everything else out to my team of resources. So it's, but I wanted to give back what was given to me, and that was life. But I was not a patient. I was never a victim. I said, "I want to get well." And so as a bounce back from adversity coach, I'm tough. I'm compassionate. But Carol Hawley, my occupational therapist, didn't go lightly with me, and I turned out great. So
okay.
I'm compassionate, but at the same time, I encourage people to do the work because I know what it takes to do it.
Sure.
It sucks, and it's hard, but it's like working with therapists that I do for their clients in between sessions, and then when they're ready to transition into their new reality, that's where I help them kind of hold that accountability to make that lifestyle accountability, that change. So it's taking an experience, not making it my identity, but identifying with it, so then I can help other people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah,
oh,
definitely
so nice.
Thriving. To get out of that victim-survivor mode
yeah.
into thriving, for sure.
You don't get anywhere being a victim.
No.
You either want it or you don't, right? You either want to live and live life to its fullest, or you just want to be complacent, or really just you're tired. So really, I just want people to know that you're not in this thing called life together. There's people like both of you, like me, like my team of people. There's people here to help you. I just want people to, you know, let go of their pride and their shame, because you're going to just, you could end up where I ended up. And that is, I just don't want that for anybody.
I'm curious, because I don't know your exact age, where in your cycle or where in these challenges did you end up losing your sister?
I was 24 and I'm 47 in November.
Mm, wow.
So I was very young. I was 24 going on 17. I was a very young 24.
And you're the youngest in the family?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the baby. Oh. So what people don't know is that Nicole was 10 years older than me.
Oh.
So she was already like living her life and I was still at home.
I see.
So, you know, my family, or Denise really specifically, saw a different side to OJ than I saw.
Mm.
You know, because she was old enough to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And she testified on a couple of incidents, but you just don't think that somebody's going to kill you, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, what was your impression back then? I mean, was it, did you sense any weirdness, or no, it was just, you know, you were just young and kind of weren't thinking that way? Do you remember at that time?
Yeah. I mean, I just thought it was a divorce that I honestly, like when she was still alive, of course, I just thought it was a divorce.
Right.
That kind of like, you know, divorces aren't amicable majority of the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, the fear that she saw in her eyes when I was packing up Rockingham with her, I saw fear in her eyes. There was a fearful conversation. There was, but, you know, again, you just don't think somebody is going to hurt you, let alone kill you.
Right.
And I share all of this, you know, all of this in my book, where we were in the master suite and she said, get daddy on the phone. OJ's home. Get daddy on the phone. And I'm like, okay, well, why? She says, just get daddy on the phone because OJ has a gun in his closet.
Oh gosh. Wow.
And I'm like, but being what, how old was I at that time? I was like 20, 21.
Right.
Wow.
Again, a young 20 or 21. I'm going, what's it? I'm like, all right. I didn't think anything of it.
Sure.
You don't think people, you know, people don't kill people in my world, you know?
Right.
Let alone somebody you've known since you were 7 years old.
So just so our listeners know, we're talking with Tanya Brown. She is the youngest sister of the late Nicole Brown Simpson. If you have any questions for her, you can give us a call at 323-203-0815. We're also talking about her new book, Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide.
I am just dying to know. So when you found out that she was murdered, what was your first thought? Having struggled yourself with, you know, in eating disorders and all these things, like, that must have been so profoundly upsetting or shock or something. Can you share that with us?
You know what? When she was first, when I first found out that she was murdered, I thought it was a drive-by shooting.
Mm. Oh, my.
You know, you immediately, I think Denise knew. Mm-hmm. I think she even testified on it. With me, I called my best girlfriend at the time and I said, hey, Missy, I go, Nicole just got killed. I think it's a drive-by.
Wow.
I mean, I was just like, I had no idea what was going on. And I think when I was in the psych unit, inpatient and outpatient, I really released that anger that I had for Nicole.
I can
because
imagine.
She had so many opportunities to tell me something and she never did. And so, you know, if you're going to lash out at anybody, make sure that you're in a safe place with a professional.
Right. Right. Sure.
You know, because I'm telling you, I let it out. I let my rage out. I let my screams out. I almost hit my therapist. I threw my teddy bear, my pencils.
Yeah.
I mean, I got mad. So when people say, wow, you know, are you okay talking about it? I'm like, yeah, because I released all of it.
That's great. You need to. The only way out is through. I always say that.
So, you know, having been in several abusive relationships over the course of my lifespan, thankfully not currently, you know, I can really relate, though, to her secrecy and her silence about things, because you just get into that bubble where you just feel it, just like you in your depression, where you just feel like you're alone and there's no one out there to help you, even though you know that there's help for you right in front of you. You just don't feel like you should open up that can of worms.
Mm.
Oh, so horrible.
Yeah, well, fear, hope, and shame. You know, you're scared to leave. You're hope that they'll change, and you're shameful. You're ashamed because you're like, You don't want people to judge you. I wrote a book, a domestic violence book. You ladies haven't mentioned it. Maybe so. Maybe you don't know. It's called The Seven Characters of Abuse, Domestic Violence, Where It Starts and Where It Can End. And they can get that on my website, too, where my co-writer, Carolyn, and I, we figured out a way to where people can understand the different dynamics of domestic violence instead of it just being physical and sexual assault. You know, so we came up with, you know, the isolator, the person that isolates you from your family and friends, the money monger, the person who controls all the money, mm-hmm. the pseudo parent, the parent that, you know, is out in the public, looks like the perfect parent, but then behind closed doors, they're a nightmare. So they can get that on my website as well. And, you know, it's just the more that we can educate and spread awareness on mental health issues, destigmatize domestic violence, destigmatize mental illness, and really people start talking about the things that we don't want to talk about, because one day you can wake up and go, I didn't see it.
Right.
How come I didn't see it? It's because you don't want to see it. And take it from me, I want people to start seeing it, because nobody's immune. Nobody's immune
sure.
to this.
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it, life's way too short to live in a violent home. There's battered women to help you. There's a mm-hmm. national hotline number, which is 800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. You know, and then your doctors, your therapists, and, mm-hmm. you know, with coaching and inpatient, outpatient, it's like there's so many resources. We just really need to encourage people to reach out and touch someone.
I totally agree with you.
Totally.
I know it's a little controversial, but the series, people have been asking about the FX series about OJ. I mean, are you happy at least that there's a little bit more awareness on that front about, you know, more what happened and more about the domestic violence, and people could, you know, see that side of it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I didn't watch the movie, to tell you the truth. It was happening during, we moved my mom, I moved, and we honestly forgot that it was on. And ironically, the day that it started was the day that Denise and I, we did a ton of shredding, like court
wow.
papers that we had, and like VHS recordings from interviews that we did.
Wow.
So we really, I mean, we were moving a 45-year-old house, so we really forgot
wow.
that this whole thing was on.
Sure.
I have been very vocal about it. I, you know, I've heard from people that it was actually a good show, like mm-hmm. you said, Kelly, that it was a good,
yes.
a good acting and good cast. And then I've heard from other people, too, that it portrayed him as guilty and kind of the behind the scenes of how they covered things up.
Yes.
So I've heard good things about it. The only thing is that I wish we would have gotten a phone call.
Oh, my
Nobody
gosh.
Called us
really?
To let us know that this was going on. Not one person.
Really?
Still yet. Still not yet.
That's
upsetting. I reached out and I emailed the girl who was playing Nicole. Never got an email.
Really?
Denise reached out to the girl who was playing her publicist. Never got a return phone call. So it's like, I want to humanize this for a second.
Yes.
Here I am hanging out at my ex-boyfriend's house and watching TV with him and his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes the trailer on.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, this is awkward.
Yeah.
I'm able to handle it because I'm like over it. But then here's another thing. I'm sitting in the living room watching TV with my mom, and there's a trailer.
Mm.
Oh. What people forget is that there are families behind this experience, behind
sure,
this story.
Of course.
And people forget that. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, it just would have been, it would have been considerate and polite and the right thing to do to say, hey, Brown family, hey, Goldman family,
mm-hmm.
we are doing this show and we're going to do the best that we possibly could, but we want to let you know that we will be running trailers on all these stations at
yes.
these times.
Yes.
Yeah, at least to think
so then,
you could be still traumatized.
Yeah,
anything
exactly.
could be triggered. My goodness.
We agree totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's my mom. That's her daughter. You know,
yeah.
people don't realize that there was so much that was lost on our side. You know, we lost OJ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was somebody who I've known since I was 7. He was a huge part of our family.
Mm.
I lost Nicole. we lost the custody case. The kids went back to their dad.
Oh,
you know, wow. So it was like mm-hmm. we lost our family,
right.
Our family unit. You know, so you know there was a lot that we lost, and people forget that. And on top of it, they didn't even consider Sydney and Justin. It's like, God, that's their dad,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. And it's like people always say, "Well, he got his justice," and I'm like, God, people forget that is their dad, and no matter what, it will always be their dad.
Sure, right.
And I will always respect the fact that is their dad,
right?
And it just would have been nice to have somebody call and say, hey, listen, this is what we're doing.
Sure.
Or call Sydney and Justin. They're really the... To tell you the truth, I think Sydney and Justin are the real victims in all of this.
Mm. Yeah, I was.
They're two kids who grew up without parents.
And do you have a relationship with them currently?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, especially my mom.
Oh, that's not nice. Really? How old are they now?
Yeah.
They must.
Sydney will be 31.
Wow.
And Justin will be 28.
Oh, my wow. gosh.
28. Yeah, 28. Yeah, that's they're not kids anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They were so young.
I know.
Time. My gosh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, 8 wow. and 5, I think. Something like that. I don't even know.
Did it bring you yeah, and your did. Sisters closer together during this time?
Yes and no. You know, grief does ugly things, and it sure. makes you say crazy things, and, you know, it wasn't good all the time. Majority of the time, it was good. But, you know, there were many moments where we didn't get along. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, grief does weird things to you.
Sure.
And, you know, it brings out frustrations and anger and sadness and pain. And I leaned on my mom and God. My mom was just such a positive light in all of it, and I don't know how she did it, but she did it, and wow. she was just such a beacon of light in my life during that time. My dad too, but my mom was just, you know, just strong,
wow,
and beautiful, and really at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Really at peace. It was really, she's always lived in a state of forgiveness and acceptance.
Wow.
And no matter what happens to her or mm-hmm. or no matter what people do to her or against her, she always lives in a state of peace and forgiveness wow. and acceptance. And I, to tell you the truth, that's a really easy place to live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to learn how to do that when I was in the psych unit.
Right.
I don't know where she got it. I think it was just her,
yeah.
you know, her upbringing in the war, maybe. I don't know.
Unbelievable. Wow. That sounds like that was...
It's a beautiful way to live, and honestly, my mom's 85, and she is alive, happy, spry, beautiful in every way, and wow. it's really her mental attitude towards life.
Wow. Isn't that the
And I
truth?
Encourage people wow. to really, like, release resentment.
Yes,
let
sure.
go. Let God. You got to lean. You got to lean on something bigger than yourself.
It sounds like she was also really inspirational in you writing the book. It sounds like she was a good role model.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom is just very... There was this one moment where we both woke up at the same time shortly after Nicole was killed, and we had a shrine, and oh, my God, we got so many letters from all around the world just addressed the Browns, California, the Browns, Dana Point,
wow.
the Browns, or just the Brown family, and it reached us.
Mm.
And I remember my mom and I, we woke up at the same time, and... She was reading a letter filled with scriptures, and she looked at me and she goes, "We're not a really religious family, are we?" Kind of doubting mm-hmm. her faith. And I said, "Mom, I said we believe. I said, and we're filled with faith. We, you know, it's mm-hmm. like you don't need to be religious to believe,
right.
you know." And it was just like she was questioning it. And I said, "Mom, you believe. You know, there's something bigger." You know, we're Catholic. I was born and raised Catholic, and it just she began to, you know, reach out, and she's constantly reading inspirational devotionals, but what really got her through it was reading the Proverbs. That really got her through a lot in the Psalms, and she would highlight, and you know, she just didn't, you know, sit back and wait for faith to come to her. She really got her on her hands and knees and asked God, like, you know, give me peace. And he gave it to her.
Right.
But he gave her the tools to use to get there. it doesn't come overnight. You really got to ask for help.
It's true. Yeah.
Curiously, yeah. when you were in your inpatient experience, was there any like one person or one experience there that you could say, you could just pinpoint really was the turnaround? Somebody said something to you or an exercise or a therapeutic experience you went through?
Yeah, I was sitting in my class. I called it class instead of group. I was sitting in class and I looked at my occupational therapist and I said, Carol, what is this? What type of therapy is this? And she said, cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And she goes, why? And I said, because it's working.
And
it really worked. And I remember just that profound experience. And I remember, I mean, I'm sitting in that moment right now as I'm sharing this story. Mm. Because that type of modality really helped me, because it helped me, you know, eliminate that negative self-talk. It helped me control my thoughts so my feelings and my behavior would change. I mean, it was a study, and that's actually what I went to specialize. I specialized in that when in my graduate studies, as well as my bachelor program.
Oh, that's great.
Because, you know, CBT with medication is more effective than just medication alone. And I want to talk about that a little bit. Everybody always thinks a pill is going to take pain away and make you feel better. And that's not the case. I'm on meds, and I still flip out every once in a while.
Sure.
And, you know, I still get sad and stressed and anxious. But you know what? My talk therapy, my cognitive behavioral therapy, the tools that are in the back of my Finding Peace book, my mm-hmm. daily self-care, it's those combinations that help me enjoy my life. You cannot rely on medication to be happy.
So true.
It does not work.
Sure. So true. But it's like somebody once said to me, it's like changing the position of the blinds. When the blinds are completely shut, closed, and you can't even see what's outside, at least the medication opens the blinds so you can see what the weather's like.
Exactly.
If it's a storm,
that's
you know it. To put mm-hmm. on a coat. If it's beautiful,
right.
you know what to do. So it does facilitate the ability to walk toward
absolutely.
Life.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It gives you the courage. It gives you, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not even going to go into it. All I know is that we can't rely on things, whether it's medication, a car, a boyfriend, mm-hmm. a girlfriend. We can't rely on things to make us happy. You really make the choice to be happy.
Yes.
You know, my ex-boyfriend kind of got on me a couple of times. He goes, are you always this happy? And I said, are you always this miserable?
It's really funny.
Yeah, it is really funny.
Well, you know, it's like being happy is a choice. It doesn't mean that I don't feel my distress or my duress. I feel it.
Uh-huh.
But being happy is a choice. I can either go through life with a humdrum attitude or a victim attitude, or I'm stressed out and I'm going to let the stress control my day, or I can kind of go through the chaos with a little bit of a joyful heart, and it makes it a lot easier. So, but being happy is a choice.
And I think a component that allows for that is by you taking charge and doing all of these things, which you may not have trusted yourself to be able to care for yourself at the time, is you've now developed a sense of self-trust that when you're in distress mm-hmm. or you're in an emotional state, that you're going to be the one who's going to support you, either by supporting yourself internally or by allowing other people in your community and other resources to support you.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I didn't know what self-care was. I thought I was pretty happy. I thought I was taking care of myself.
Sure.
I didn't know what aromatherapy was. I didn't know what time management was. Speaking of time management, I fainted my first day of college at UC San Diego.
Fainted?
I thought I could do it all.
Did you say fainted?
I fainted.
Oh, wow. Because you were so overwhelmed, you mean?
I was so stressed out and overwhelmed. I was like, okay, but again, these are the cards I'm dealt.
Sure.
You know, I had to get to the psych unit to learn how to slow down, mm-hmm. how to digital detox. You know, we're too connected to technology instead of to ourselves, spirit, and to others.
Yes.
And, you know, meditation, time management, structure, goal setting, being a realist, but more importantly, being authentic.
Yes.
I think we live in such a world where people are so scared to let their true being shine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like you're doing yourself and maybe somebody else who needs to see your authenticity. You're doing everybody a disservice. So, you know, let that shine.
Right.
You know, I always put so much pressure on myself having to be happy all the time. Yeah. Like having to, not choosing to. And that put pressure on me where, you know, here it's like, and then when I would have a bad day, somebody would go, God, why are you so grumpy? It's like, what? I'm not allowed to have a bad day.
Sure.
You know, so it's really just living life in authenticity. Like, really, people, if you're sad, you're allowed to be sad, but don't stay there too long.
Right. Sure. Well, we love your attitudes. And so, question for you. After this whole thing happened with your sister, obviously it probably took a long time for you to forgive and then go through your process. Did you see OJ after this had all happened, and what kind of feelings did that evoke? I can imagine quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My mom and I, we would drive the kids up to Palos Verdes or halfway to a halfway point to exchange the kids. Mm. I would have to go into his house. I did that 2 times.
Wow.
But you kind of, you got to suck it up because there's kids and that's their dad.
Yep.
That's and their dad. Yeah. And he put his hand out for me to shake it. And I was like, oh, I'm not shaking that.
Right.
So
he's asking for a little,
gave him a little
too much.
Pat on the shoulder. You know,
right.
I'm not going to shake a hand that committed this horrific crime.
Right.
You know, so, oh yeah, I saw him plenty of times after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. People forget that this is not a stranger that did this. This is somebody who will always be connected with my family because of the children.
Right.
It's true. People do forget that. You're absolutely right. I just don't think they think beyond that. Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable.
It doesn't go away. For the Brown family, this will never go away.
Right.
No.
I mean, it'll never go away for the Goldman family either.
Sure.
But it's like, until he's gone, he's connected to our family. Mm. And, you know, we don't talk to him. We don't see him.
Right.
We don't talk about him unless we're doing education.
Sure.
But he's always connected to us through the kids, through Sydney and Justin.
Is there any time you tell people that Nicole was your sister, is there anything that people say that you're like, oh my gosh, how could you say that? I mean, I can imagine you probably hear all sorts of comments that are hard to hear.
No, you know, because like what I said, I've coped with it. I've let out, and it's, you know, it's been 22 years. So
that's
a
true.
Lot of, you know, there's a lot of time in between, and time is your best friend.
Right.
During things like this. You know what? It's always words of support, always.
That's great.
I've, you know, we've gotten emails and phone calls that are nasty, but the people who I meet are very, very supportive. And, you know, they feel sorry for my family, and I don't want anybody to ever feel sorry for us.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel compassion, but don't feel sorry for us. We're good, you know?
Right.
But always words of support and kind. And what I have noticed, though, is that when I'm speaking to the younger generation, they don't know who she is.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Because it was.
They don't know who she is.
Wow. Oh,
it was 22 years ago. So when I'm talking to a group of 20-year-olds, they don't know who she is. Or maybe I'm talking to high school students, and they don't know who she is. Until I attach his name to it.
I see.
Then they get it. Yeah.
I just got the chills. Oh, so there's, that's me.
Yeah, it's a celebrity attachment to it. So when I speak Nicole's name, they don't know who she is.
Right.
So sometimes that trips me out, where it's like, wow, you don't know who she is? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, look who I'm talking to. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
So when this whole movie came out, you know, you and I we went through it. We saw it.
Sure.
My family saw things that you guys didn't see, of course,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, in the trial and in the courtroom and stuff, but, this new generation, I don't want them to, again, I didn't see the movie, so I don't know how much of it's true or fabricated or what,
mm-hmm.
but if things were fabricated, I don't want the new generation to believe that that is truth.
Right. Sure. Of course.
You
yeah.
know.
I don't want them to believe that. If you want to believe anything, read, you know, online, read newspapers, you know, don't, you know, like valid newspapers,
right.
reliable, not like the National Enquirer.
Sure.
But, you know, that kind of fear, you know, that it's, you know, there's a lot of truth and there's a lot of fallacy with that show, I'm sure, because we're a pretty uninteresting family, to tell you the truth. So I wonder how much excitement there was. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all for sharing this case with students of all ages, because a lot of things change in the forensics,
yes,
in psychology classes, in the way we handle domestic violence cases, criminal cases.
Yep.
So there have been a lot of good things, especially Violence Against Women Act, that was during the Clinton administration, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like there's a lot of good came out of this case. A lot
That's
of good.
So nice.
A lot of bad, but a lot of good.
That's such a great way to look at it. Really, really beautiful.
Again, it's a choice.
Yeah.
You know, we all have crap that happens to us. We all have it. And so it's like, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
Absolutely. So.
You know, somebody needs to hear your story, and, you know, or maybe you need to share it just with somebody just to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, again, it's a choice what you do with your experience. You can either sit and hold it in, or you can let it be known and share it and really help a lot of people who may need to hear it.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is my version of turning chicken shit into chicken salad. Yes.
There you go.
You're finding that.
Seriously.
And really.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
That's good.
It's beautiful that you can actually look back at all this and be able to share from that perspective so that people can, you know, you provide a lot of hope for people.
And inspiration, 100%.
Inspiration.
Yes. Yeah. I think what you're doing is wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks. You know, I don't want people to struggle. I struggled. I lived behind the mask of a happy face. I lost a lot of friends in high school. I lost my sister.
Yeah.
I lost my brain.
Right.
You know,
sure.
I lost a lot. I almost lost my life. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I don't want people to go through all the stuff that happened to me when all they need to do really is let go of pride, fear, and shame, and pick up that phone and ask for help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't need to get to the level of what I suffered from. It doesn't need to get there. And but people just feel so isolated and so alone in their trauma, and they don't need to.
Absolutely. So, Tanya, we are actually out of time.
It
went so fast.
It goes so fast. I know. But always remember, I'm a phone call away. Sorry I couldn't be there live. But, you know, let me know if you have anybody that comes through your emails. I'm really approachable.
Okay.
But if you're going to send nasty emails, I'm not going to read it, people.
Of course.
Well, we will not send those
no.
off to you. But we have never gotten a nasty email.
Yeah, exactly.
We've only gotten lovely, wonderful emails. So we are talking to Tanya Brown. We're going to be saying goodbye in a moment. She is the author of Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide. And where's the website that people can find you at?
They can find me at Tanya, T-A-N-Y-A, Brown.net, TanyaBrown.net. And there's a story of Nicole on there, my family, and both of my books are on there. I have some going to the store. I've got a fun little huge hugs necklace because everybody needs hugs, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, thank you so
much. We all need a hug.
So, we'll send you a virtual hug right now.
Exactly. And thank you also for helping end the stigma with mental illness, because I really believe that your book and having people read it will help really end the stigma with mental illness. So thank you for being brave and courageous.
Thank you so much, ladies. Sure. Listen, enjoy the rest of your day and your week, and I'm always a phone call away, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. So inspiring, right?
So inspiring, absolutely. Oh my gosh. So next week we have Dr. Tanya Altman, author of What to Feed Your Baby.
Yeah.
It's exciting, too.
We need a little lighter topic, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have a great website that's currently continuing to be updated.
Perfect.
Right?
Yes. DocandTherapist.com. And we also have a Twitter, DocandTherapist1. And you can always email us at docandtherapist@gmail.com. Or you can check us out on Facebook, The Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show.
Yeah. And, you know, most importantly, just go to our website, docandtherapist.com. That's doctor spelled
exactly.
D-O-C,
yes,
because there's all kinds of information there. And also, we are opening up our sponsorship again.
Yes.
So if anybody's interested in becoming a sponsor for our show, we will be happy to tell you more about that. In the meantime, have a beautiful week.
Thanks,
Kelly.
So much.
I love you.
Me too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.